welcome to Shades and Coffee, the almost weekly Look Good, Feel Good podcast, presented by me, Vivian Braidwood. My guest today is a career coach, something that many of us don't have access to or don't even know what that means. It's something we could definitely all benefit from to help us make sense of our current situation and our future career goals and aspirations. So please welcome co-founder of People on Work, Paul Diamond.
It's, I think, a nice time to talk to someone such as yourself and just get some top tips about, you know, how people can get the right perspective in terms of, you know, what they want to do, even what they're doing now, but the future.
Yeah.
So I want really to hear a little bit more, but just a little bit more about you.
So I'm a career coach, not a life coach. The difference is that, you know, all the work that I do with people is about work. You know, and there's times where things outside of work have a part to play in that conversation. So I've learned that it's really important to make that distinction for the work I do.
Okay.
Started my career not knowing really what I wanted to do and not really having a very much of an exposure to work at all beyond what my, you know, what was done in my family. And even then, you know, being younger, I didn't really think about what my dad did that much or what, you know, his friends and you know, the adults that I met at that time didn't really think about that because it didn't really apply to me. And then school, you know, I was kind of not really thinking about the future that much. And even, you know, going in to do something like A-levels, I wasn't really thinking about what I was going to do next. And it was just an accidental thing. So in careers would be called kind of happenstance. There's a theory of career happenstance, and there's also something called chaos theory of careers, which is, and it comes out of research. What those theories and theories like them talk about is, well, you can plan things, but just a bit like you were saying before, there's all these things that happen that you can't plan, and just, you know, chance meetings and things that you're interested in by chance, and that leads somewhere. And so things like, you know, happenstance and career chaos theory take account of that. And so one of the happenstance things that happened to me is that there was one of our neighbors when I was growing up. I had started work and, you know, it wasn't really something that I'd connected with at all. Some of my friends went to university, but no one in my family had ever gone to university. So I didn't really know what people did at university other than, you know, have a good time. And then a visit.
It'd be more than that.
Yeah,
I can assure you.
I visited a couple of my friends actually, and I realised there was a lot more going on than that. I think the thing that appealed about it most to me it was that kind of, you know. And I remember visiting a friend of mine who was at Aston University in Birmingham, massive campus, and it was like, wow, there's all these people who are the same age, and look, they've. You know, it was just that was the real appeal of it to me, and that it was a very different learning environment to school. So this neighbour of mine, when I grew up, he offered me a temporary job in recruitment, which I didn't like at all. But here's the happenstance thing about that, is that introduced me to interviewing people, which I did really enjoy. And I kind of carried on in recruitment for a few years. And again, there were parts of that really didn't fit with me, or I wasn't very good at, or I found it a real kind of slog to get myself motivated to do. But the part that was always interesting to me as I look back was interviewing people, but the part of interviewing was listening to people talk about their careers. So if I then speed forward quite a few years, a couple of decades at least, you know, I've been very lucky. So I've interviewed thousands of people, or spent thousands and thousands of hours interviewing people, listening to them talk about their careers, you know, learning a great deal from that and learning a great deal around that from the kind of services that are provided, recruitment, executive search, assessment, and then on to coaching and organizational psychology and things like that, all of which are kind of teams and people that I've worked with. And so when it comes to somebody looking for a career coach, the kind of work that I do with them and the approach that I take is listen very carefully. You meet someone where they are. So the first part is how they got to where they are. So, you know, which is the past. Where they are right now, which is awareness of their situation, position, the things that are available to them, the things that their skills and experience and motivations kind of, you know, make available to them as well. And then the third leg of the stool, if like, is the future, and that's where they want to be. So where they are is the present, how they got there is the past, and where they want to be is looking forward. And so I listen very carefully to that person, that individual person, tell that story. And an interesting thing always happens there, because there's what you think has happened, or your memory of what's happened, and then there's what actually happened. What actually happened tends to come out in the narrative. When somebody talks about their relationship with work, or their past in work, or their career, in fact, there's certain things that make that not a free conversation. And that is, if you're in an interview and you're looking for a job, because you're trying to get that job, and that has a bearing on the stories you tell and the way you talk about yourself, and who you're talking to, you know, that has a big effect on the way you tell your story and the depth to which you go. Most of the time, we only get a few minutes to do that. The work I would do with somebody, they get as long as they need to tell their career story, to construct and reconstruct their career narrative. And that's another career theory, narrative construction and deconstruction, which is something we all do and we all go through, and not just in work. So we're continually telling ourselves and other people a narrative about who we are, where we are, what we're doing, where we're going. That narrative is something that can be changed all the time, and that's an act of deconstruction and reconstruction.
So do you find that some people, they're telling themselves a story, or they hear themselves telling other people a story, and that story at some point might no longer be true, but they believe it because they keep telling this story?
Yes, exactly.
And they're not even aware of that until they come across someone like you who helps them to deconstruct that.
Exactly. And, you know, a good example of that is, let's say you join a company, you stay there for 5 years, and you interview, you get the job, you stay there for 5 years, and then you decide, or for whatever reason, you're looking for another job, or you're looking to do something else. You're going to tell your career story in a different way 5 years later, to a new audience and to different people, including the people in your social life as well, your family, your friends, because that's an important part of that narrative construction and deconstruction as well. So a lot of people get stuck when they're not able to change that narrative, or don't feel able to change it. So people, either themselves or people around them, won't let them change that. You know, well, hang on a minute, you're a plasterer. Why do you suddenly want to give up plastering and become an electrician or a gas fitter? Why would you want to do that? And that might sound like a very small obstacle. Somebody else thinking, why are you changing what you want to do? Or even yourself thinking, oh, you know, it's a bit too late for me to do that. Why would I want to do that? And so a lot of career development stories are arrested there.
They're massive obstacles. For instance, when I left finance and I went into beauty, yeah, those narratives, my parents, some of my, you know, close friends, like, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to do that? And then myself, I mean, I find myself a bit embarrassed, you know, have I made the right choice?
Yeah.
And it took not weeks, not months, but years for me to come to terms with that. And then some of the other terms that you've thrown around, it's really nice, because I've not heard some of these before. Chaos theory.
Yeah.
I know what happens, dancers. And it's funny, I interviewed someone last week, and I said to her, listening to her and how her career had mapped out, she had this, in my eyes, this perfect, perfect story of following her heart, following her passions, and having these incredible bag of careers. Whereas when she was telling the story, it sounded like pure chaos. It was like, well, I tried this, I went to uni, I didn't like that, so I left, went to work there, didn't like the boss, left that, went here. And she had all these incredible jobs that she really loved, sort of things that I would love to do. And I said to her, it's funny, the more I talk to people, the more I meet people like you, I thought with all that chaos, I just could not fathom that everything would mesh together so well. And if I'm really honest, a lot of those stories, things have meshed better than the way that my experiences in terms of work mesh together. So yeah, I had to sort of just start again with a blank sheet in terms of my thinking around that.
So, I think that's a really good example. So when you measure, when the measures, the things that you're measuring are extrinsic to you, so external of you, like, let's say, a career in finance. So if you're measuring your progress, success, happiness, which is a bad measure anyway, but, you know, for example, if you're measuring that by your career in finance. Let's say your career in finance comes to an end either because you want it to or things happen beyond your control and that comes to an end. Then your kind of frame of reference has just disappeared with that. And that's really hard to recover from. So one of the things that I learned in, you know, not just through my own work, but working with other people in this area, and I also very lucky, I've been associated with Henley Business School now for a good few years, and there is probably one of the most the preeminent thinkers and practitioners in careers in the UK, a lady called Dr. Nima Pasha, who I've worked really closely with in a number of different ways, which is a bit of a sidebar. But coming back to what your frame of reference is, so through all this work in careers, I realized that these extrinsic measures and things that people tend to use when they're thinking about their careers or when they're coming in to change in their careers, you can lose them. And losing them means you can lose their way. So it's really important to have something that can't be lost. So that's why for a number of years now, the focus of the work that I would do with anybody individually and the focus of the foundation for the work with people on work is what we call your relationship with work. Like any good scientific study, although I'm not a scientist, but I borrow heavily from learning in science and the scientific method. And one of the central pillars of the scientific method is something is true if it can't be disproven. So far, focusing on your relationship with work as the center of learning and study and progress in your career hasn't been disproven yet. And it's been tested vigorously, not just by me, but by other people as well and the people we've worked with. And so what does that all mean? Well, that means, going back to the example, if you're working in finance and you lost your job tomorrow, you still have a relationship with work, whatever work you do, and you still have a way to process your experience to date, where you are today and what you want to do or where you want to get to in the future. You can do that work with a great deal more security that what you're finding out and what you're learning can't ever be taken away by either an event or another person or an employer that the relationship breaks with. Everything you're learning and everything that you're gaining as you understand your relationship with work better just can't be taken away. It still belongs to you. That's really important. And it has a really important bearing on individual resilience, individuals' ability to bounce back from difficult events in their careers, like redundancy or coming through something like the pandemic, and also coming through things in personal lives that affect our ability to work, like illness or, the breakup of a relationship or things in family or with people close to us. So
it's funny because you say that, and I think a lot of people, although you've explained it, very well, would struggle with that concept because earlier, about 2-3 minutes ago, you said happiness is a really bad measure. And my own experience of people when I've been an employer is that that's what people are basing on. They have a problem when they're no longer happy. But you've actually said happiness is a bad measure. So tell me more about that. How can happiness be a bad measure?
Because it's so unreliable. So you could do a job that made you happy today, tomorrow, for the next few weeks or the next years. But then where do you go if, at some point that work that you're doing, that environment you're doing in stops making you happy? A simple answer to that might be, well, I'll just move somewhere else that makes me happy. Well, what if that stops making you happy as well? And so, I remember somebody saying to me once that I think it's the American Constitution, is they don't promise people happiness, that they say something about the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah. Read the small print.
Yeah. And it's not that you can't end up being happy or in place doing things that make you happy or contribute to your happiness. It's just that there are things that you can base your learning and understanding really important decisions on that can probably be a little bit more reliable to you in terms of, what their outcomes are going to be.
Okay, so if someone is listening to this and they're thinking, well, okay, you're talking about the relationship with work and they're trying to understand it and think, oh, what about my relationship with my other half? Well, if I'm not happy there, then there's something definitely wrong in that relationship. So using that sort of scenario, can you explain it a bit better?
Yeah, the way I always think about relationship with work is how the work you do makes you feel. So, and that, because that's what gives you the ability to start in interpreting and interrogating what you're doing and, you know, yeah, how it feels to you or what you think about it, which then contributes to the way you're able to talk about it. Well, first, it gives you something to base that narrative, your own narrative around. So this is what I'm thinking and feeling about work, which is a great starting place, which then gives you a really good foundation to talk to other people about the way work makes you feel and what you think about work or the work you'd like to do, which can have a really useful or does have a really useful impact on your ability to interview or get across to other people, including employers or the people you might want to work with if you're independent, you know, get across to them what kind of addition to their lives or companies or anything else like that you might be. So coming back to the example, so if you're in a bad relationship, the best thing might be to leave, but then processing whether you're in a good or bad relationship is something you have to do yourself. And that comes from your relationship with a number of things, including with that other person. But your relationship with work, even if you're not doing any work at the moment, it's still something you can learn from and ask questions about and come up with narratives, things to say that are consistent with, you know, who you are, what you want, and what you're aiming for.
Okay. I suppose when I think about my, you know, all the relationships I had prior to getting married, I guess in a way, well, not in a way, I know for certain, I was evolving. I was a different person in each relationship. A number of factors were at play. It wasn't always about the other person. Often I was learning about myself, and it was that connection with them. I might discover that, you know, I thought I wanted this, but actually, I don't. Yeah. And I can see from what you're saying how I can translate that into all the relationships, not just with partners, with friends even. You can look at the friends who've left your lives and why they were there, what you learned, and then why they're no longer there. But again, all of that is really hard for like the average person to work out. Like, at what point does someone like you come into their lives? Do they need a big event? And then like, oh, I'm feeling lost. And then, they seek someone like you. I know at school you have like careers counselors, but they're a bit rubbish in general. When I was at school. But where do people go about, like, how do they work out that people like you exist or the process, how they tap into that process of self-discovering and learning more about their relationship?
It's a really good question. It's a really good question. I remember when I left the company I used to work with in London, and one of the really senior guys had been a really good mentor to me, brilliant, brilliant guy. He said, one of the things that you're going to have difficulty with this path is that, he said, you know, and the business I was leaving, although it had a coaching and consulting arm to it, it was really a headhunter's executive level recruitment. And he said, it's really simple to explain what we do as a business. A company needs a person, we find the person, we place the best person in the role. He said, but you can't explain what you're doing simply. So that's going to be a problem. And, you know, I've been independent now for about 13 years doing this work. And I think about what he said all the time, because he was right. And just very, very quickly, it's something you said about, I had the same experience with schools careers as you did. I'm going to defend schools career services, but not the kind of experience we had, but I'm going to defend the need for careers services in schools and the reality that there are some really, really good practitioners and some really good career services in schools. I think the failing has been in the way it's been managed. The failing has been in the theories that were behind the way it was applied, and maybe the fact that the world of work has changed, the way individuals relate to work has changed. So the importance of the relationship with work that we all have has changed, because we've got so much more choice about what we do. The likelihood of us changing what we do throughout our careers is so much higher than it used to be. So, you know, careers as a profession, I think it's something that has, you know, real value to add and hasn't fully gone through the evolution that it needs to in order to give people the support, encouragement, time, space that they need to not just make the right decision when they're leaving school, but continue making good decisions throughout the length of their career.
And I agree with you. My experience was rubbish, because it felt like a 5-minute conversation. Thought about this, thought about that. Okay, bye. Whereas, you know, fast forward, like, you know, many decades later, what I know now, what's clear to any adult who started work, is that you spend most of your life at work. So your life
Yeah.
Is mainly work.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, all this time they spend on time, as in the time that the schools spend on maths and English and drama, there's an argument to say that the overriding thing, kind of the umbrella that encompasses all those things, is career. Yeah. Like whatever you do, no matter what road you go down to train, whether you're an artist or an actor, whatever, career. So there's an argument to say that it should almost be like a module rather than just a 5-minute conversation or an afternoon where you go and see the careers teacher. It should almost be embedded in the curriculum because it's the biggest part of your working life.
And that is actually how it's now done in business schools. So at Henley, career development and, you know, learning about, you know, these career theories, how to understand your career, that is actually now part of the curriculum, as it is in a number of business schools.
But what about the schools?
yeah, there's a road to run there. Yeah. I think in my experience, that which isn't, you know, and I'm learning more every day with people on work, and I've done things in the past with schools through Careers Box and other kind of projects. I think there's some places that it's excellent. There's some places that it's, that it's okay. And there are some places where it's almost non-existent. I think that consistency of experience for students, it's so important because it just has such a massive impact on something like social mobility, you know, which is again where people on work comes in, because we want students and people of at any age when they're thinking about work to not be at a disadvantage because they didn't know something was being done or that they didn't know how somebody got into doing something. That to us just doesn't feel right, and it's something that we would really want to see changed fundamentally. And you know, the interesting thing is, the earlier you introduce people to the concept of something like their relationship with work or something like, you know, that their careers are going to go through all these different kind of changes and that they're going to go through these changes as well as they grow and get older, the easier it is not just for them to expect that these things are going to happen, but deal with them, recover, learn, you know, move on.
Yeah. And the thing is, I've seen so much evidence of that. We as in human beings, we're so adaptable if the mindset, you know, is right and the input into that mindset. So, you know, I talked about the fact that I view life as uncertain and unpredictable. That's life by definition, which is exciting for me, even though there are some scary parts of it. Because the alternative, I know, if I had the magic wand and I could make my life totally predictable up until the moment of my death, would be awful. Even if I could make people fall in love with me and get the jobs that I wanted, it would suck all the joy, all the challenge, everything that I hold dear. And so with that mindset, you know, it's easy for me to be more resilient.
We don't know how clever we are. And what helps people move forward or move on in their lives is just the ability to find that out and figure that out. For me, people on work isn't all about education, or it isn't all about you need a careers professional in your life. Sometimes it's just a very simple thing that somebody talking might say, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I started out, or I didn't have a plan, or I really was anxious because everybody else seemed to know what they wanted to do and I didn't. But you know what? I've realized that's okay, because the third question we always ask people is, what would you say to someone starting out today? And so when somebody who's reached a really good place in their career and has talked about when they were younger being anxious about not having a plan, when that person's answer to that question, they could say anything they like, but what would you say to someone starting out today? Do you know what? It's okay. You'll work it out, or you'll be okay. You know, and that's all some people I think might need, because they're brilliant in their own right. And then they can just get on with being brilliant, you know, without the worry about, oh, I don't know what I want to be, or I don't know what I want to do. Because some people know really early on in life. Some people find out later. Some people never find out. It's okay. It's all okay.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the way society changes all the time, like something that's, you know, this is really good for you. The next thing you know, the science tells you this will kill you. If you eat too much of this, this will kill you. And that's in all walks of life. I think it's brilliant what you're doing, because I think you're quite right. If I look at all the people who I've come into contact with in my life, there's definitely different kinds of intelligence. And the things that move me the most are often created by people who are not academically intelligent. And I think the world has come quite a long way in terms of, like, the judgment that used to go with, if you're not academically intelligent, you're somehow failing. Yeah. So the system is geared up to just reward that. And what I like is, from speaking with you, there's definitely a shift from we're going to tell you, like the careers coach at school, I'm going to tell you, you should look into, you know, being a baker or whatever. And also they're going to tell you how intelligent you are, or we're going to tell you what forms of intelligence we value the most. And what you're saying really is, well, just letting them tell us. There's potential there in everybody, and you have no idea. You have no idea where that potential can lead. So rather than sort of capping it, you know, or sort of keeping it in the dark and not letting it out, you're putting something out there that can just help feed that potential and just see where that individual goes, basically.
Exactly. You never know, when you put something out there, you never know what effect it's going to have. Mentoring, I think, as well, is something that is easy, very easy to misunderstand. So if you say mentor to someone, you always think of formally somebody who, you know, there was a managed intervention that that person had in your life. But I don't think that's the whole picture. It might even, in some cases, be the only thing that other person ever says or does to us or does with us. But that mentoring impact can be just as important as...
Oh, it's massive. It's massive. Yeah, somebody can watch one of your videos and something that they hear within that. If we think back, I mean, it's hard because, as you said, your memory lies to you in a way. But it would have been, more often than not, if you listen to, you know, when they interview athletes or, you know, whoever, presidents, it's some like a word or a sentence that someone said.
Yeah.
And it could have been a really positive thing. It stuck with you.
Yeah.
It might have perked your interest in something that they said that annoyed you and you thought, I'll prove them wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Usually it's like there's a moment and it's just something really simple and small like that. So I think you're right. And I think it's great what you're doing. I believe from my own personal experience that this sort of thing should start at school age.
Yeah.
Basically, because it's just one of the biggest things about life is your relationship with work.
Yeah. I think you explained it better than I did when you said, you know, you have relationships, whether they're romantic ones or with friends in the past, and you learn something from them and you move on, and that changes something you do or the kind of way that you go into the next relationship. And that's exactly the way it works with your relationship with work. So you leave a job that you really didn't like, but there were some things about it that you did like, and there were some things about it that you did learn. And, you know, you take them forward into the next phase of what you're doing, and your relationship with work deepens to another level, or your understanding of it has a potential to deepen to another level. And you know, again, it's not always about having to make change. Without changing what you're doing, where you're doing it, or where you are, it may be a realization that actually this feels, after a bit more analysis, this now feels like a good place for me to be. So some of the work that I do with companies, it's when they've got somebody who is thinking about leaving. We do careers work together, and we always do that from the point of view of exploring their past, present, and future, but also exploring where they are. And, you know, where those feelings that they would be better off somewhere else were coming from. What was it they were looking for? Is any of that possible for them to get where they are, or for the, you know, the company they're already at to provide them with? And, you know, in some cases, you know, I'd be guessing if I gave you a specific, but I would say 50-50, 60-40 in favor of people finding it where they are.
It's like marriage guidance. No, but it's true. When I think about, you know, often anybody that's married, I mean, you're married, you know this, but, you know, when you sort of sit down and work out like what's bothering you, what's making you want to pack your cases and go, I realize that I'm happy and I'm better off here. But it's all these other things that I sort of have to unpick. And
that's a really good example, because and I can't remember who said it to me, but I saw it on TV when I was very young, but somebody was talking about wherever you go, there you are, kind of thing.
Yeah. You take yourself with you.
Take yourself with you. Yeah. So, you know, you hate your job, you hate the company, you hate your boss, you go to a new place and you know, you have all the same problems. And now, you know, what are the chances that all those things are being caused by everybody apart from you? And of course, I'm not saying that the individual's to blame there, but if you can understand a little bit more about the role you're playing in that and the things that you may be able to do slightly differently to stop those kind of patterns repeating themselves and feeling like you're in the same situation again and again, then that's got to be good for you.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Paul. And final question. So spring, as I said, it's just, you know, an inhalation away.
I love the positivity.
Considering that everyone's had quite a crazy year, as in the crazy last 12 months, and their relationship with work has definitely changed. Like, whoever you are, your relationship with work has changed.
Yeah.
Even if you're still working. I'm not talking about people who are no longer working. Any advice?
Yeah, it's a really tough question, because I think the year that we've had, you know, the impact that that's had on people's lives, you know, first and foremost, if they've lost anyone, you know, how are people going to recover from that? It really has been a once in a lifetime event. And then, you know, you move on to think about people who've, you know, like on the high street, for example, stores closing and other companies making people redundant, and even, you know, some whole sectors kind of going away overnight, like hospitality. Now, you know, we know that will come back. But if that is how I was paying my bills, I don't know what I would have done. And I don't know what anybody else could really say to me that would make me feel better about that. Because my ability to feel better while I was worrying about being, you know, and I know that there are some protections that people who can't pay their bills or have lost income have got, but there's always people who slip through the cracks in those stories. And it's really difficult to imagine what that would be like. For situations like that, I think that, you know, a different intervention is required. Those are crises. So, and you need a crisis response to those kind of things. You know, the same way, if you really hurt yourself, you need an ambulance. You don't just book yourself in to see a GP. You know, and I think it's something that I used to say to myself, actually, before, you know, I really knew anything about the work I'm doing now. And that is, if I had, you know, because I used to think, oh, what if I get sacked tomorrow kind of thing? So I wasn't doing anything that was going to get me sacked tomorrow, but I always had that fear, well, what if I get sacked tomorrow? And the one thing that was a real comfort to me then is even if that happened, the sacking can't remove from me the things that I'm able to do or that I know how to do. And the part of me that wants to pick myself up and dust myself down, and if I've been knocked down today, get up tomorrow, I think H.G. Wells said, which I always liked. On top of that, I would say, we, and when I say we, I think we as people, just we undervalue things that are, that not just employers, but the world of work and our lives outside of work, that are hugely valuable, but are never on things like job descriptions or never in interviews or recruitment in a way that is easy for us to understand. And they sound really corny when you talk about them. Things like how reliable you are, things like your attitude towards other people, things like your willingness to take something on or get something done, and they make the difference in so many, you know, even at the senior executive level, even, you know, when I'm interviewing people for CEO positions, and it is often the person with the, yes, they've got the experience, but they've got that, you know, that look in their eye and that, you know, that. And it's communicated in lots of other ways that leaves you in no doubt that given that opportunity, that person will do everything that they possibly can to make the, you know, the best out of it and have the best outcomes. And I think that works at any level. And, you know, and this is a very long and rambling answer, but the last thing I'll say is I remember reading, and it was back in the 2008 recession, and there was an employer being interviewed. And he was being asked, and he tended to hire a lot of people who were ex-services. This is in the US, actually. And they said, why do you hire people from ex-services? And he said, we hire people for things that they can do that we can't teach. And that is what I was talking about willingness, about their, you know, their desire to do a good job, desire to kind of learn and contribute to, not, you know, to the company and the team, you know, the good relations in a team. And companies reliably, I think, want to hire those kind of people because they make places of work and teams of people better places to be.
So in terms of the relationship with work for those individuals, I'm trying to sort of see if I've understood what you said, they shouldn't lose sight of the fact that it doesn't change who they are and all the special set of skills, some of which are never listed on CVs, that they come with. And they still own all those things.
Yes.
That, you know, what if you call it a superpower, whatever, that they still have that is still that person. It can't be taken away. And although there's factors outside of their control, like if there are certain industries that have shut down, we're having to work very differently. You own that. That's you.
So if we think about the last 12 months, one of my, it's our old neighbours actually, he lost his job right at the beginning of the, well, it was just before the first lockdown. And that hit him really hard. And it was in a sector that they weren't really hiring and haven't been hiring. But we've talked a few times, you know, while this was all going on. But I heard from him recently, he got a place about 3 months ago. So he got back into work about 3 months ago after probably about, you know, 6-9 months out. And he said, during that time, I was, for the first ever time, I was a teacher because he homeschooled his kids. I took all the running of the house over, so I was a house husband, you know, and he did it. He broke down the things that he was doing, and he said, and these things have definitely changed me for the better as, you know, I'm a better employee as a result of these things. And he said, and you know, I think at least some of these things helped me and the way I came across when I was in the conversation that ultimately led to me getting the job. So don't devalue your own experience and don't think any component of your experience is too small to be important, because sometimes it's what's revealed in the thing that you do share rather than don't share that describes who you are to the person that you're talking to and makes them realize that you're the person that they want.
Amen.
Society's gone through some big changes, and the intrinsic value of work to the person doing it is something that I think we kind of lost, you know, we lost our way with a little bit. It doesn't matter what you do, if it's right for you and if it fits in your life right and if it answers your relationship with work in a way that feels right to you, then that is a measure that will outlast any external measure or whatever anybody else thinks or says about what you're doing.
Thank you so much for your time today. There's lots and lots of information in there, which, well, certainly very useful for me, and I hope the listeners will get a lot out of this as well. And if people want to find out more about you, peopleonwork.com,
yeah. Yeah, and if people want to contribute to People on Work, all they have to do is answer our three golden questions. What do you like about your work? How did you start out? And what would you say to someone starting out today? And film themselves doing it, and then we publish that, and that's shared on YouTube, and it's there for people to find and connect with.
Yeah, that's a great way to make it, and an easy way to make a difference. So yes. So anybody listening, please.
Thank you so much, Vivian.
Oh, you're really welcome. You're welcome. Really enjoyed the chat. Thank you.
You've been listening to me, Vivian Braidwood. Ask me any lifestyle related question, or let me know which topic you'd like me to cover during our essential coffee break. Tag me and use the hashtag Shades and Coffee with Vivian on Twitter or Instagram. If you like this podcast, hit subscribe and please rate us. Shades and Coffee. Look good, feel good.